Happy New Year, everyone! A new decade is upon us, and we have a feeling it's going to be another special one in the sporting world. What's more, it's also an Olympic and Paralympic year, and who better to join us for the first episode of 2020 than two athletes who are hoping to represent Team GB in Tokyo this summer. As those who follow us on social media may have seen, shortly before Christmas, we were invited to the Mintridge Foundation's Ambassador Training Day, and we're very fortunate to spend an hour with Marilyn Okoro and Laura Sugar and record what we think is one of our best ever episodes. Over the next 60 minutes, we talk to Laura about her successful transitions from hockey to athletics and then athletics to canoeing, how a chance viewing of London 2012 on TV made her realise that she could actually compete in parasports, wedding dresses and much more. We also talk to Marilyn about receiving her Olympic bronze medal 10 years after winning it, her aspirations to compete in Tokyo, and using the power of no to prove the doubters wrong throughout her career. We also talk to them both about the brilliant work they're continuing to do with Mintridge and their hopes for the charity over the next 12 months. So make sure you don't go anywhere. So welcome back, listeners, and we are very, very privileged today to be joined by not one, but two guests in Marilyn Okoro and Laura Sugar. So first of all, thank you both very much for coming on the show.
Thank Absolute you. Pleasure. Excited to be here and sharing it with a lovely lady here.
Can't wait, ditto.
So we're here as part of the Mintridge Ambassador Training Days. I guess sort of, first of all, if you could explain, you know, how much you've enjoyed the last couple of days and how much it means to you to be a part of this fantastic charity.
I'll let you go first, Sugar.
Okay. But I think actually for both of us, we've kind of been with Mintridge since pretty much, well, you've the very beginning and I'm pretty much at the beginning. So we've known Alice for a long time. And for me, I'm still very much loving working with young people and getting young people in sport. I think that's a huge passion of getting, that's the future of kind of not just the future of sporting elite, but of just young people in general and their mindset. And if they can grow up with values that sport and physical activity and healthy lifestyle can give you, then hopefully the world will be a better place. So it's getting that message out there. And I think Mintridge is great for that, for getting guys like us out there that, yes, our stories of getting to elite sport are great for those individuals that want to get there themselves, but also hopefully they can take things away from us and our general approach to day-to-day life of what they can put into their own hobby, regardless of whether it's sport or not.
Yeah, I love a quote, so I'm going to have a quote here.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's Nelson Mandela who said, you know, sport has the power to change the world. And, you know, now Team Mintridge, that's basically our goal. And I think times like this where we all get to get together as one big family, because that's what we are ultimately, it's really not just about harnessing the power of sporting role models, but just being good humans. And the fact that, you know, Alex and the team have put together something that not only, you know, yes, we're out there mentoring young minds, but they're also thinking about our development and making us better role models. So I've just been blown away, really, because I was the first ambassador. Must put that out there.
You beat me to it.
Yeah, but you know, made your best friends, Alex. but just seeing it from the beginning and also just seeing it before it was anything and for it to come into fruition and then to just totally blossom the way it's blossoming, it's really, really inspiring in terms of my personal growth as well. But also it's quite selfish because we get so much back from our Mintridge days with the kids. So yeah, I'm really, really proud to just be part of something so, so special.
And you said there that you were the first Mintridge ambassador. How did you sort of get involved and how did sort of Alex approach you with the idea in the first place?
So I met Alex during the Commonwealth Games, which was probably one of my worst championships to date, but the best because I met Alex. So, you know, sometimes, you know, seeming failure, actually something's going to come out of it. And literally she was volunteering in the friends and family section. So I was there a lot because, you know, I exited a little too early. And she was just a lovely, friendly face, had, you know, struck up conversation. Anyone who offers me Percy Pigs, we're going to get along. I think it was sponsored by Marks and Spencers. And so nothing much came of it then, and I got an email through saying, would you like to be an ambassador for another company she was working for at the time? And I was like, oh yeah, I want to meet this girl again. I didn't even really do any research on the company, but it was about inspiring kids, going on camp, so I was all about it. at that point I was based in the States. So Alex was really instrumental at sort of keeping me involved with what was going on in the UK as well. I worked for Jutes for a bit, and as I got to know Alex, I just thought she was such an ambassador for sport, and especially females in sport. So we really sort of connected over that. And she just told me about the idea of Mintridge, and I was just, I'm very all in. I was like, just go for it, just do it. You know, sorry. But I was really, really passionate. I just told her, look, I'm 100% behind you. So, you know, this is the dream, and let's just keep watering it, and let's see what happens. And here we are. What's it, 4.5 years later? 3.5 years later. So yeah.
I think you helped a lot as well in the early days of pushing in the ideas, your positivity of being like, yeah, come on, Alex. And
yeah.
And both of you bouncing off each other.
Yeah. And I think Alex also was trying to keep me motivated and keep me going, because as she shared with me, I was sharing with her, and I was in a very sort of difficult place with my athletics as well. Like, you know, she's always like, look, just, you know, get to the next goal and then you can work for Mintridge full time. So I think that was a little carrot she dangled, and I'm still going.
Still going.
But yeah, Mintridge literally has kept me in the sport as well. So it does mean so much to me. But also just seeing someone accomplish their dream as well, it makes you want to go out there and keep fulfilling yours.
What's it like then these days when it's not just about the Mintridge in terms of the interaction with the children and everything, but these days where you actually come together with different athletes from different backgrounds and you can share each other's stories? Steve Eskenazi, we were talking to him earlier about how he's learned so much just from this morning session. I guess how much do you value that as well, coming here and having these different talks and listening to other athletes and sort of learning from them?
I think it's great, and it's invaluable for us because we are in kind of very different sports, and it's a great opportunity to literally even just to hear people's stories of how they got into sport, and it gives you kind of a bit of perspective sometimes, and also knowing that it's not so different, everyone else across the different sports, that everyone's probably shared similar experiences to you. They're all a great bunch of people. We have a lot of fun as well. It's not just all serious, but we have a load of fun getting to know each other, and it's really nice to bounce off each other for different ideas, because I think especially for us too, we've been with Mintridge for quite a while, that sometimes it could be easy to say the same thing every time at presentations, or kind of lead similar sessions, where then you get ideas from other people and then you think, oh, actually I could bring that into my next either mentoring session or school visit. It's really nice just to get inspired for different ideas and maybe thinking, oh, actually the way that they did something would work better, and just trying out different ways.
I think I love the fact that, you know, Alex was telling us earlier, you know, not just anyone is a Mintridge ambassador. So I love that, you know, we're all here and been handpicked for a reason, and it's mainly due, or more so due to our values. Obviously, we've all got sporting prowess, but, you know, you need to fit the Mintridge values and morals. So therefore, when we do come together, it is like, it's just so easy. I'm very, very motivated and inspired by listening to everyone's journeys. We're all at different stages, so it's quite nice to, one, be reminded sometimes of the beginning. Like, I met Iona for the first time, and she, you know, she's in track and field, and I'm just like, oh, you're all, you know, fresh faced,
young and fresh,
beady eyed. And I want to keep nurturing her as well. And, you know, for her, she's looking at me thinking, gosh, you've been to all these games, and I'm just trying to get to one. And, you know, so it's important that, you know, we do hear other people's stories and other journeys, and not only do you resonate with certain things, but you can also sort of help each other. Things like the presentation skills, very, very daunting thing. But, you know, people have just gone up there and been comfortable enough to share and been quite open. But also after today, hopefully they feel that they can, if they're struggling in any area, they can just pick up the phone and be like, hey, Maz, you know, did you go to this school last year? Because quite a lot of the schools we repeat with different ambassadors. So connections like the last 2 days we've had hopefully just bring us close together, so we can all make each other better for the same goal, really.
And how does it make you feel when you go into a school or you speaking to your mentees over Skype, or and you can see them reacting, you can see them responding, you can see their eyes sort of lighting up? How does that make you feel as a person, really?
I think it's no doubt it's really rewarding, and it's especially for us that are still trying to reach even more goals and still training every day. You can get quite caught up in that, and then you go and do a school visit, and it kind of reminds you why you kind of started sport in the first place, and you actually get to revisit all those areas that you haven't maybe talked about for a while. And then you see the reaction from, and it, kids are very honest.
You get, very honest.
You also get some weird and wonderful questions as well as the good ones. But yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I have done really well. And it's actually really rewarding for us. I think people forget that, yes, we're representing Mintridge, and we love and we're doing that good thing for the school and helping those young people, but actually it's really rewarding for us and we benefit a lot from Mintridge as well. We're not just working for Mintridge, it's a two-way street, and we get, especially days like today where we get kind of CPD training with it, we gain a lot, and we go in schools and we gain a lot back from the kids. It's amazing how small things they could point out and just suddenly, oh, that's quite, it's quite,
what the sort of things they will ask then or point out.
Kids. I think, you know, there's been days, I can't lie, you know, you have your bad spells and you have your bad days, but those have been the days where I've had a school visit and I've gone in and almost the first kid I see has said something that's just completely changed or made it worthwhile. That's why I got out of bed today. And I think that's a really, really powerful feeling. And also, I just love championing people. And so when you go in there and they're just like, oh my God, I love it. And I go in and it's Marilyn Day. And I'm like, yes, that should be a national holiday. but these kids are so excited. So whatever I'm carrying for that day, I'm like, you know, they deserve the best me. So it almost keeps me accountable and just completely has the power to just transform my mindset. And then I remember why I started. It takes you back to the good old days and sports days. And you're like, oh, track is amazing. And, you know, my life is definitely going to be measured in more than just my medals. I love, I'm proud for everything I've achieved. But I think I lost a bit of gratitude along the way. So going into these school visits has made me really reflect on what it's taken to achieve those things. And those are the stepping stones to anything you're trying to achieve in life. And those are the key messages I want to leave with the kids. And just seeing a kid that, you know, they're quite, like you said, kids are honest and they'll say, I don't really like PE, miss, but I've bought my PE kit because you're here today. So I'm like, that is an amazing start. And by the end of it, they're like, I'm going to join my local running club. So just to have that transformation in a 40-minute session and an assembly, I think it's incredible.
Yeah. It's also really refreshing, as you say, when, like, quite often they're not, like, almost simple linear way of thinking. Well, we get so caught up of all the technicalities and all these, yeah, you know, things, selection, pressure to win medals.
Yeah.
And then you kind of say that you're feeling under pressure for doing this. And they just go, well, why? It's just running, or it's just pedaling. Like, and then you go, oh, yeah, it is. Like,
keep it real.
It's actually, it's a more honest and easy way. Like, oh, actually, maybe you should just go and speak to a 10-year-old about my kind of feeling under pressure for a sport. And you do get some weird questions, especially from, if they're in assembly, the younger ones at the front just put their hand up and their question is, I like running. Or, who's your mum and dad?
Yeah.
I've had that quite a few times.
Do you know Usain Bolt?
Do you know Usain Bolt? That's quite a common one.
Miss, how old are you? Is the classic one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, proudly, 35. Oh, you don't look that old. My mum's older than you.
That's,
and then it's like, okay, wrapping up question time. But then you get the kids that are like, Miss, you're so beautiful. And you're like, you can stay.
Stop it.
I like you. but yeah, I just love that innocence. And when you've got that kind of mindset and you can engage with kids like that, you can get them to do pretty much anything. Like, you know, it's not about being the best, but it's actually about trying. And then you'll realise, actually, I can do this.
Yeah.
And then hopefully they want to try it again.
Going to move on now to focus a little bit more on yourselves as athletes. And it's the end of 2019, quite a productive 2019. And Tokyo 2020 is only a few months away. How are you both sort of feeling, reflecting upon this year and looking forward to the next few months?
What a question.
I was like, no, you go first.
So for me personally, I'm going to say it's an exciting time. 2019 has been a year of complete transition and breakdown, and let's just start afresh, and taking all the good bits from the last 15-16 years and drawing upon all my experiences. I'm constantly in flux. I'm just the athlete that moves from place to place. Wherever I need to be for my track, that's where I'll be. So currently I find myself in Wigan training with Trevor Painter, who is the husband of my good longtime rival, Miss Jenny Meadows. And again, it was through a Mintridge day that I met Jenny randomly. And you know, on the surface I looked great, but inside I was just like so lost and I just hated sport. But I was there inspiring kids and that kept me going. And Jenny was just like, what are you doing next? And I was just like, oh, I'm gonna get a proper job. And she literally invited me up for a week and I'm still there. I eventually moved out of theirs. I stayed for about a month. I was like, I could get used to this. But you know, what I found is an amazing training group, an amazing coach who really has compassion for his athletes, and you know, is actually given me a lot of ownership over my training, because what I've learned is that I do know me better than anyone else. So I'm just trying to sort of avoid a lot of the pitfalls that I've had in the past, and trust my knowledge, trust my experiences over the years, and get back out there, because it's been a lot of start stop. I've been to America, I've been back to Essex, and you know, the goal has always been to get back after 2012, and I think that's, I guess I'm bouncing back from that. And you know, life doesn't always go in the trajectory you think, but I'm healthy, so that was always, you know, it's about the small victories, and when I goal set, they're really, really detailed. So where I am right now, I had to remind myself, like, this is what I wanted, where I wanted to be, healthy, no injuries, because the last 5-6 Decembers there's been a niggle, and when you're younger you can kind of push through those, but as I've found, the older I've got, you know, the body wins. So training a lot smarter, enjoying it, because that's what this next season is. And definitely still on that road to Tokyo, so still 8 months away, so we're not going to jinx ourselves, but I'm in a happy place, and I think happy athletes perform well. Yeah, how about you?
My 2019 has gone different to as planned, but it's gone very well. I'm still doing athletics at the moment, but I was kind of mainly athletics, could kind of just finished, we'd been Europeans and planning for my next year, and then I'd have been asked to try out para canoe, been asked for a kind of a year or so, because I kind of fitted the right disability, and also they knew I was strong in certain areas that would form well. And I kind of, this time last year, I think I was about over 60 seconds to do a 200 meter in a boat, and it was kind of, oh, this is a bit of fun doing alongside my athletics. And then between kind of Christmas and April, I got a lot quicker, a lot sooner, so I kind of went from, I think, 62 seconds to like 49 seconds. And so yeah, my year of being mainly doing athletics and with a little bit of a canoe mixed in ended up being slightly more para canoe and still athletics, but a little bit less, because I ended up going to world championships and exceeding wet expectations in that sport, which was amazing. And so it's just at the moment it's combining both sports leading towards next year. I am moved funding to the para canoe, so the weighting has slightly gone more to that. And but it's all the same as Marilyn's, trust is kind of the little baby steps every way, is because we can get kind of caught up and we've got to get, I was like, oh yeah, Tokyo, you're going to Tokyo. And it's like, well, got to get selected first. You can't just decide you're suddenly going. It's not just like that. It'd be great if it was.
Just going to sign up online. I don't know about you.
So I'm still learning in the new sport of para canoe, still trying to, same as Marilyn, keep fit in athletics. And seeing where the new year takes me. It's the minging part of winter, isn't it? Where all the sessions are really long, or it's just so much volume, and you're literally, like we were discussing, that overtired is a real thing. Your parents tell you it's not, know that it is, and you were thinking it's not when it's young, yeah. And it is a real thing.
Yeah.
So it's getting through those small wins and hopefully getting fitter and faster each day. But yes, it's been a good year, but it's all, next year's a big year, and it's trying to not think so much about the end goal and thinking about those little wins in between and that process, and hopefully that'll ultimately get us both there.
And touching just upon something you said there, you said that you sort of were told that you had the right sort of build and frame and skills for canoeing, but what made you want to go over there? Did they approach you first and say, we think you could excel at this sport, or did you sort of express an interest in them?
Yeah, well, when I started Paris, I kind of fed into athletics. I came from hockey, and I didn't know my foot was eligible for Paralympic sport at all, because you kind of, in my athletics category, you see the blade runners, you don't see people with ankle fusion like me. So I kind of went straight into athletics. I knew I was fast and I knew I was powerful, and kind of it all really spiraled from there to Rio. I didn't really look at many other sports. I've always loved every sport, so it's not like I'm just one sport and I hate all the others. I'm really, this is why being at days like this where I get to meet loads of other sports people is great, because it fascinates me. So I always, when I went away on holiday and things, I went kayaking, I've tried kayaking, and but again, you see the para canoe category, I had no idea that my category, that my foot made me eligible, because you see, oh, it's just arms, so surely it's just the people in wheelchairs that are doing it. But actually, it's a lot, I've learned now, it's a lot about leg drive. So I would have, I I never would have even tried it just because I thought I wasn't eligible. And also, I've always had really powerful legs and really strong legs. And I was like, I don't have strong arms. Turns out, if you have strong legs, you probably have strong arms too. You just hadn't trained them for years. So I knew I'd love it. It was a blessing in disguise that they kind of approached me. And not saying I still love athletics. I still have goals in athletics. But I do have those challenges every year. I get faster, but because I compete against blades, like, five people got a new leg last year, and suddenly, not saying that they still got stronger, they still got better, but also the technology is getting better. And I'm still back myself to be in the hunt for medals. But actually, there's another sport that I love, and it would be a more level playing field, and I wouldn't have that whole doubt in my mind of, oh, hang on a second. Sometimes I do, especially against the double leg amputees, I'm like, am I ever going to be able to beat them? Because I don't have the kind of capabilities that they do. So it was that opportunity. I literally went to try it out because I thought, I knew I'd love it. And you have to, if you're going to put yourself through training day in, day out, you've got to love a sport. And I love every sport, but I knew I'd been doing it on holiday and things. I'd go out kayaking for a bit of leisure time. So not saying I was any good at it all, the technique-wise. I then loved it even more than I thought I would when I first got there. The environment they create is fantastic. And it's very similar to athletics. It's sprint kayak, so it's a 200-meter straight line, and you're in lanes. So the actual concept of the racing is really similar, and that's what I love. And I love racing. I don't kind of want to just go out and do a time trial and then wait to see what everyone else done. I like being in that race and in that environment. So it was almost exactly the same. You just sat on your bum instead of running around. So that's it. It was a blessing in disguise that they came to me, because otherwise I wouldn't have known that I could have been even eligible for it. So I wouldn't have then kind of approached them to go to it.
And not thinking you're eligible is a little bit of a theme in your career as well. Because am I right in thinking that you only got into athletics in the first place because you saw someone else with a similar condition and thought, well, if they're doing it, I want to do it too, sort of thing?
Yeah, as I say, I've always loved sport, and hockey was my main sport. My father's Welsh and I played for Wales kind of up to the age of 21, and I thought, this is my career. That was the one I kind of tried at school and was really good at. But you could, unless you were kind of in the full GB setup, you can't make a living out of hockey. You still have to pay to play. So I kind of became a PE teacher, and I my dream was to be a full-time sports person and be involved in sport. So when I literally watched London 2012, I was working at a kids camp, actually. I think I was sat making like clay models. I think they were like alien athletes. It was space theme week, but it was the Olympics and Paralympics, tied together. And I literally, as I say, you see in the Paralympics, you see wheelchairs, you see blades, you occasionally see some guide runner, like blind athletes with guide runners. There's a lot more, there's so much more to it, and there's loads more disabilities that are the slightly more hidden disabilities. And I know my foot had no movement. I've just kind of got on with it, and that's probably really helped me. And also the fact that my parents didn't tell me it should hold me back was great, and that's probably in the position I'm in now. But actually then I never knew about the Paralympics, and I saw someone, actually not even in a running category, it was in discus. And so general people see me, they don't see my disability that obviously, but when you point it out, I've got, my ankle doesn't move, and so I have a really skinny calf. I have no muscle there, and a kind of weird couple of bones sticking out. But so to me it's obvious, and when, especially in the discus, they do a close-up on their feet in the circle, and I was like, I've got that foot.
Wow.
And I literally went, I've got that foot, I could I be a Paralympian? And I looked, wow. It's not that simple.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just gonna do the Paralympics and I'm gonna win. But I thought, actually I could try it, and I knew I was quite fast. I knew in the hockey team I wasn't the slowest, so that's why I kind of then went and tried it out, and it's the best thing. I was terrified because it was a weird the kind of identity change from being the hockey player to the disabled athlete, when I'd had my foot my whole life, but it was weird, that identity change and that going along to being like, oh, and almost feeling a bit of a fraud that I didn't have as bad a disability as some other people. So that was the only thing holding me back of going to that day. I'm so glad I went to that day to try out sports, and it was a sport fest in, I think, Guildford in Surrey at the end of 2012, that it was literally come and have a go.
Mm-hmm.
And so thankfully for London 2012, otherwise I still may never have known.
That's quite an interesting point that you raised there about feeling like the fraud, because I guess, had you grown up then thinking that you're not that your foot was normal, but that you just were a normal person, just a slightly different foot to everyone else?
Yeah, I knew it stopped me doing some things, but I kind of got my parents, I guess, to thank for it, that it stopped me doing loads of, I always kind of waited though until there's something I couldn't do and then try and overcome it. I never saw it as holding me back, and I knew that I couldn't, there's certain things, I couldn't ever stand on one leg, or, but it was always, because it was my foot, it was a lot of physical things, and I always kind of found another way to get around it. So I just always had the attitude of it was never going to hold me back. So I always acknowledged that I had it, and I was in my foot, and it was always in the hockey team, it was always the running joke, like about my foot and things like that. It was, and I always owned it, and I loved, and it's never really bothered me. But then I get, now I've been in power, and I'm like, oh yeah, I look back and I realise, oh, it has probably did stop me doing quite a few things, but physical things, like it's, but also, as in, my parents were told when the doctors, when I was born, they were like, oh, she'll be absolutely fine every day of life as long as she doesn't want to be a sports person. And they're like, oh, she won't be sporty, it'll be her brother. My brother hates sport. And I got the sporting bug. So that was the best thing. They never told me that. And they never, and I like sport, and they took me to it. Like, so I don't think, I've just not let it hold me back. And I've not ignored it, but I'm like, well, why should I kind of shuffle around things when I could just give it a go anyway? So it is weird because, weirdly, as I've got into Paralympic sport, I've realised more things that I can't do because I've pushed myself more. Mm-hmm. But also I've come across varying disabilities, and from thinking, oh, actually, do I fit, to then, say, coming against the blades, and I've actually got a disadvantage against the blades. It's given me that whole different perspective of, actually, you don't really know individual to individual. You have to really understand their disability. The disability in day-to-day life might be not as bad in the sporting environment. It's how it affects you in that function.
Is that something that drives you as well, what the doctor said initially, the fact that he said, oh, you'll be fine as long as you can't be sporty? Is that something that drives you proving that actually I can do what I want, there's nothing holding me back?
Yeah, now it is. I didn't know at the time. It was only when I got into Paralympic sport, my parents were like, oh, they did say that you wouldn't be a sports person. I was like, oh, cheers, guys.
You know that thing you're really amazing at?
Just got the sporty bug. But I think it is a driver. I think I think all my life I've been quite good. I've had quite positive people pushing me on. There was one particular I guess you'll probably remember certain coaches or people telling you can't do that. Yeah. But I remember one specific hockey coach, like, didn't give me any like feedback as in how I could get better. All I wanted to know what areas I can improve. She's like, just don't think you're gonna make it because you're not fast enough. Now I'm like, ha.
Show you.
And I wouldn't know, like, that thing actually really inspired me on to look back
the
and get
the power
actually,
of no has yeah. basically fueled my entire
I guess,
career.
Marilyn, you probably like had yeah. so many told, and that's I guess when we go into
started
kids,
with my mum,
if people tell you can't do it, it makes you even more yeah. determined to tell
yeah.
you can.
I used to hate the word no. I used to just have this weird reaction to it because, you know, growing up how I grew up, there's a lot of no's and you can't do this and you can't do that. But the first no that I was defiant against with my mum, because my mum's a Nigerian lady, okay, let's just get that out there, you know, I went to this incredible school, you know, grew up in Northwest London. So being in that school already, it was like, you've got to make the most of this opportunity. Nigerian background, you're going to be a lawyer or doctor, right? So I go home and I'm like, Mommy, I won sports day. And so I didn't send you to school to run, read your book. I was like, but Mommy, I'm the fastest. I don't care. Can I go training? Can you go? Like, before I could even say anything else, I was up, you know, carrying on doing my homework. So that was the only no that my mum has ever said, that I was like, do you know what? There's more to this. Like, I can be a great athlete and I can be a great student. But, you know, George really believes in me. And that was my very first coach. And I think he just saw that, you know, yes, I had the talent, but I didn't have the support network at home, didn't have the finances. So he was just that person that he said, her mind needs to be really strong and I need to fill her with confidence, which he did. And I went to a fantastic school in Hertfordshire, and they really developed Marilyn, the individual, as well as being the athlete, as well as being the student. So yeah, we got around my mum. I mean, I had to make it to the Olympics for her to be okay, but, you know, details, schmetails. And so every no, I've just tried to turn into a yes. And every negative situation, we've just tried to find a way around that mountain. And, you know, there's a balance, though, because you can't, you know, every race can't be fueled with, oh, I'm going to show that person, because I'm quite an emotional person, as you can probably tell. So it's, you know, as the stakes have got high, I've had to, you know, really remind myself of why I'm doing stuff. But definitely the power of no has been something I live by.
Yeah. Also the power of yes.
Yeah,
that's what got me in the situation to start off with, that I went yeah, I'm gonna go try it. Yeah. And I think that's, as yes. you said, is a lot, most sports people are probably yes people,
just like, turn sometimes those no's into yeses.
Yeah. Sometimes you say yes to things and then you go, why did I do
you
that?
Mean not yet, right?
Yeah.
You mean not yet.
Like, oh, you want to do a presentation in front of 2,000 people? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you're like, why did I say yes to it? But something always good or learning comes out of it. And 100%. I think you find out with a lot of sports people is they've either been told no and said yes, or they just say yes to things.
And I think, you know, that the F word, well, there's two of them, fear and failure. They need to be your best friends, because the other side of that fear is the thing you want most, and failure is your greatest teacher. So it's like, I've really learned to turn that around, because growing up, how I grew up, it was like, I wasn't allowed to do anything wrong. And, you know, high achievers generally perfectionists, but actually just learning that it's striving for excellence, which is just being the best you that you can be, making sure you leave no stone left unturned. And yeah, just learn, like, if you, those perceived failures often direct you and put you in the direction that you're supposed to be on. So yeah.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
Going on that point then, what has been sort of the greatest highlight of your career so far? Whether that be overcoming a failure, or whether that being achieving something, what sort of being the moment you look back on and think, wow, I did that?
This is such a hard question.
Sorry.
I think I'm really proud that I'm still in the sport and I've managed to turn around the last 18 months and not given up. That's kind of my tagline, hashtag never give up, NGU. But, you know, if I think about bits of my career, because I think you're just so in the moment, like you just, you know, everything's 4-year cycle or 2-year cycle for world champs or Europeans and qualifying times. And I didn't really ever celebrate each milestone I was getting to. And I was doing some incredible things until I couldn't do it anymore. So, you know, running 159 just for fun, like just totally, you know, running 50.5. Whereas now that I, you know, it's a little bit more challenging. And the things that I used to do in training, I just literally took it as given, because I just had to do it, you know. So things like, I look back on running 159 on my own at Lee Valley, the windiest track in the universe. Actually, the UK is just windy tracks everywhere. But I was so desperate to make that world champs team that the night before, even though I'd run 159, I think I was like hundredth off at Crystal Palace in front of thousands of people, I needed to go and prove and run it again, run the standard at Lee Valley with no one there at my local league in the B race. So things like that, just being able to bounce back and be laser focused on my goal and go after it. I'm really proud of those things. Obviously making teams, you know, pulling on that vest, because it's something that I'm so desperate to do again one last time in my career. So I do really, you know, I don't take those for granted anymore. But just the fact that when I do decide that I've had enough, which happens about once a month. no, but when I, you know, when I do get, because everyone just says, you just know when you know, when I can't be bothered to go down the track and put myself through 2200s, I'm sure I'll know. Just being able to look back and say, you know, I've had a really long career and I've met some incredible people, and I'm giving back in some way. I think everyone used to ask me, are you going to coach? And I'd be like, hell no. Coaches are crazy. So no, I don't want to be a coach. I am a lot more focused on sort of the athlete well-being and mindset and mentoring. But it would be criminal if I didn't give back in some way, because I am a unique athlete for the UK. We don't have many 4A athletes, or a lot of them are not allowed to blossom as they need to. And I think in many aspects of my career, like they've tried to stifle me, but I've just stayed true to who I am and stayed true to my running style and my shape and who I am. So definitely I need to give back in some way and inspire the next me, male or female, to just be them. Yeah.
I think when you said about like looking back and enjoying it, when you asked about like what's the key moments, that's like you could look back and say, oh well, this medal or that medal or this medal. Like, I mean, the relay medal I got meant a lot, because coming from a team sport to an individual, that was almost one of the ones I most enjoyed. But actually Rio final, the 100 meter, I was really nervous. And it's, you kind of you put so much pressure. You do it because you enjoy it, and then you turn up, you get in the core, and before you race, you're like, why am I doing this? You that's literally hate yourself before well, every race, thing, and you're like, why? And then you get out there, you race, and you love it.
Yeah.
And it's you have to sit in a room and wait to race. That's the worst bit. And I remember all my races, I went in ranked like 8th and 10th in Rio in the world in both my events. So for me, it was to get to the final, and I had to run a personal best to get there. And I did it in the 200, broke the British record, went to the final, came 5th. Was amazing and a new personal best. And then the 100 meter semi-final went, and that was the one where I was like kind of literally just made it through fun. That was when I was ranked 10th in. And it kind of went like a bit of a blur. I'd had like a bit of illness during the Holden camp and really stressing of need to fly home and things. And that 100 meter final, it was the last race of the whole Paralympic Games on the track. It was like 9 o'clock at night, full stadium. And I remember stood on the start line. Normally, I like nerves. I always run better when I've got nerves. I think quite a few people do. So I still had the nerves, but I just stood there and I went, I did it. I said to myself, and I just smiled and like I look back on it and I'm like, it was the 100 meter final. It was like massive race, like full crowd. It was like, you know, the blade race for the women. And I just went, I've done it. And that moment, I really remember, I don't remember any of those because it's all blurry because you put so much pressure on yourself and like you enjoy it at the time, but you kind of have to almost watch it back on video to feel real. But I really can literally, whenever I need to, I can stand on that start line again and go, I did it like from watching 2012 and wanting to be a full-time athlete, wanting to be at the Olympics or Paralympics in whatever sport that may be. So then go, I've done it. And that was really weird that it hit me on the start line at the 100 meters in Rio. And again, I ran a personal best. I came 5th and I beat like the reigning champion from 4 years ago. But that feeling of, that's the only time I've kind of really appreciated it while about to start a race. And so above all kind of medals and things like that, yes, I really love all the achievements I've done, but that sense of I've actually done what I've set out to do. And I still put pressure on myself, I still want to do well. It's not that there's no pressure anymore, but it's actually that bit of appreciation. So that's one of the moments that I'll always remember because I kind of can, because I've not blocked it out. But
I kind of like to
nice
call
feeling.
That when I'm in my talks, the pressure perfect moment.
Yeah.
Because it's just being able to, I think what you did there is you still had the nerves, you still had, your drivers, but you also really appreciative of where you're at, because you, in that moment, you're just like, this was my goal and look at everything I've overcome and I've made it here. And so you're like, I'm going to enjoy this.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what every athlete just craves to feel in that moment and being able to deliver.
Yeah.
What's it like competing at an Olympics or a Paralympics compared to competing at a Worlds or a Europeans or a British Championships? How different is it, or is it different at all?
I think it's different for a few reasons. You have the whole village invite. You have all other sports there, and you're not just on the athletics team or the community team. You're part of that big either Team GB or Paralympics GB, and there's so almost, you always feel like there's more people behind you. Like I remember before Rio, there was like just a thing going around online, and you could click, oh, I'm supporting this person. Just random people could be like, I'm supporting you. Like, and it was that thing, that part of it is amazing. And also I think the fact that it only comes around 4 years, like, so like kind of the added kind of incentive that it doesn't come around that often, it's a special thing to be a part of. I don't know, what do you've been to?
I've been around. Yes, I think obviously the big O is massive, but if you think about sort of now, I revel in, oh, I'm an Olympic bronze medalist, but I didn't have my bronze medal for a lot of my year of my career, so that is, it's a new thing. I didn't even have to run to be a bronze medalist. amazing. If someone had told me that.
Great.
And I think given the nature of the 800, it didn't matter if it was Europeans, Worlds, Olympics, it was always just cutthroat competition. And okay, knowing my journey, it's been marred with drugs and sport. Again, the DSD debate, conversation. So I think when it came to the nitty gritty in terms of competition, I tried to personally not be like, oh, this is the Olympics. Oh, it was all, oh my God, it's game time, it's competition. And my threats came from wherever, whether it was domestic, whether it's the States, whether it's Africa. And that's the beauty of the 800. We're all different shapes and sizes. Some of us were coming from the speed background, some of the endurance. You'd randomly get a random Moroccan who'd just suddenly run like world lead. so, yeah, between the three, I didn't and also because personally I love to push myself from the inside, so I felt like if I said, oh, it's only a European, I might drop my performance level and be like, ugh. So yeah, and I just felt like, you know, no matter whether it was a Grand Prix, the competition for me was always good. I always had to bring my A game. I was always gonna, you know, be that person that goes off like a bungee, and I always just wanted to run fast. However, the Olympics is really, really special. If I ever did differentiate, I love the multi-sport element, the village style. I did used to get frustrated when we were just in hotels because you didn't get to see everyone and, you know, social butterfly and all that. And there's so little time to socialise anyway, so it's nice that you're in a village. And obviously merch, like, who doesn't love all the stash you get?
Duvet.
No.
Best bit is when
the duvet.
I've got them. I know. I know.
The best bit is when the athletes bring it into the office and give it out to the staff. Then you can pretend you're an athlete. That's what it is.
I think it's as you say, it's that no one can take it away from you.
Yeah.
You still have all your kind of medals if you win them again, but I guess kind of titles can be they taken as a world champion. But if you've got that title of Olympian or Paralympian, you've been to A games, you've got that for life, and that's really special. And I think the term gets thrown around. I don't know so much in the Paralympics. There's a lot of everyone uses the term, oh, you're a Paralympian, for people that are para athletes. Well, actually, it is special to people that have been to Paralympics. Yeah. And I think it's once you've done it, it is a special thing that you no one can ever take it away from you. Similar with Worlds and Europeans, it's just that different, as you say, that pinnacle of our sport that you can say you've been to and you've done it.
Got letters after my name now.
And as you mentioned there, you have an Olympic bronze medal. It did take, unfortunately, 10 years for you to receive it, which I guess, how does that make you feel? Does it bring an element of frustration, or are you just proud to say, I've won an Olympic bronze medal? It doesn't matter sort of the length of time it took to actually receive it.
So that was actually I've had 3 medals given back in retrospect. And that was probably the most powerful one, just because I stood on the podium and I had Chrissy, Nicola and Kelly, and they've all retired. And I thought, do you know what? I still want to go back out there. I've still... can compete, you know, I haven't changed my lifestyle so much where, you know, it's not realistic anymore. And I just thought, it was the only one that I've been given my medal back, and I was really emotional because I was just like, I was good enough. You know, it's just, it was really that was my selfish moment. It's the only time Jeanette Quatcher, I remember, came to interview me. I was like, pass, can't talk right now. Just because it just took me back to getting kicked off funding. You know, you read that letter and they're like, you are not a global medalist. And I was just like, well, I actually was, so that was technically incorrect. But you know, I was in that crazy, it was just before I met Jenny to decide to move to Wigan anyway, and I was just in that place where, what have I got to show for the last 10 years of service? And then it was almost like, you know, believe in yourself, because whether you've got a medal or not, I'm still the same me. I've still run that, you know, I needed to just look back on my journey and appreciate what I'd done. So, you know, just kind of hope that justice will always be done. But irrespective of that, I can't control that. It was great. I had a great celebration. But with or without the medal, I'm still the same Marilyn. So it was just about kind of rallying around the people that really wanted to support me, and just trusting that my body could do it, and I needed to lead with my mind, because I think my mind was now lagging behind. But yeah, it's great. I'm really proud of our sport for cleaning up. There's dirty Russians. But I like
can
to
we
look
keep that bit in?
I think so.
We'll slag them off and off.
Listen, been bad again, so.
And I just think that it's just about, you know, owning your journey, and whether I make it to Tokyo or not, I'm okay with that. I'm just going to do whatever I can each day to be the best me that I can be, really.
You're listening to Sportspiel, the Players podcast.
As a massive fan of athletics myself, so I think when the para athletic worlds were in London, I went 4 times, Alistair, is that right? Once to the worlds as well. Like, I love watching athletics, and whenever it's on TV, I'm always looking at the positives and I'm always trying to defend it. But there have been so many stories doping, funding, yeah, all sorts of things coming out in recent times. And it frustrates me because it detracts what other people, it detracts from other people feeling the way I feel about watching athletics. Mm-hmm. How does it make you feel as athletes when all your potential good work, all the amazing things that you do are undermined by other people?
It's so sad because it's almost like every amazing performance now, there's that question mark. Oh, but, you know, are they clean? You know, and I think that is really, really sad because we know what goes into it day in and day out. And unfortunately, the few are spoiling it for the many. But at the end of the day, we just have to keep being great ambassadors for clean sport, talking about it, having the conversation, and, you know, hopefully situations like mine can inspire and just let people know that just keep doing the best that you can do, because there are people that are on our side. And, you know, just control the controllables. So a lot of people say, oh, are you frustrated? Are you angry? I can't really waste any more emotional energy on something that is beyond my control. So just comply with anti-doping and just be the best ambassador that I can be. How about you?
When you said earlier about the things that are out of our control, like we can do our best to promote clean sport and help spread the message, but ultimately we can't stop someone from another country or mm-hmm. any athlete that potentially wants to cheat. Like, yeah, we can't physically stop them. And it's that fine balance for, you want to be an advocate for your sport and promote it, but you have to focus on your training. And if you, and as Amanda said, if she'd spent so many years like stressing and worrying about like kind of who's doping or whatever, you probably wouldn't have had the performances that you would, because your emotional energy when you're training day in day out, you can't just kind of waste energy here, there and everywhere. You have to put everything into it, and so you have to be careful where you spread that energy. So it's promoting our side, and I think UK anti-doping is fantastic for that, and we have a really good system in our country, luckily. Mm-hmm. And so we do need to keep wearing the awareness, but we need to control our controllables and be satisfied that when we go and do the absolute best we can, that's the best that we've done. And hopefully, if there are cheats out there, they will get caught. And you kind of have to have trust in that process. Yeah. Help to push it forwards and make it better, but also have that faith so that you don't get too kind of dragged down into it.
I just always say they need drugs to run with me, so, you know.
Conversely then, there's a real plus point that I've noticed in athletics and paracanoeing at the moment in that it's women who are leading the way for Britain. You've got Jeanette Chippington, Emma Wiggs, Charlotte Henshaw, yourself in canoeing. You've had Jess Ennis-Hill, Christina Hurugu, you've had Dina Asher-Smith, all these great women. It's a fantastic time for women in British sports at the moment. I guess, how proud does that make you feel to see so many women not just winning, but also being admired and being talked about for what they're doing?
Amazing. I guess it's so good, especially for when we work with younger people, is to be able to, the amount of times that, especially when I talk about para sport and I ask kids who's watched para sport, I ask, have you seen Johnny Peacock? Like, or if I see athletics, I'm like, have you heard of Usain Bolt? Mm-hmm. It's been there's been male figureheads out there, and now I can go into a school and be like, you know, Dina Asher-Smith, mm-hmm. Katarina Johnson Thompson, yeah, and they know that they are household names with mm-hmm. young kids in general, but also young girls especially, that there are more household names coming out there, and that's huge for inspiring the next generation. Like, there's young boys growing up wanting to be footballers. There are so many idols and so many inspirations for them. Where there's not as many in the public eye as women, and it was great, like the recent sports personality had both Kat and Dina both there, and that was just fantastic to have that on that global scale, have it in the media. That's what it's got to do. There's loads of women doing really well, but it's having it in the media that's accessible and becoming a slightly more well known. That's going to get the word out there to inspire that next generation, and especially with girls, especially like around teenage girls, that's the kind mm-hmm. of biggest drop rate,
yeah,
of sport. Especially from my perspective, like paracanoe, I'd love to kind of push it more out there as well, because it's not accessible in some cases, but it's also in some places it is accessible. I've trained in Nottingham, so kids can go and try sports out there, and some kids don't like the generic sports of hockey, netball, rugby that you get given, yeah, at sport. And so actually the range of female ambassadors out there, like the loads of female horse racing, yeah, ambassadors out there at the moment, that's more than ever seen before. And all these different sports coming out, and that shows girls actually, if you don't like one sport, there are actually others, and there's other activities that you might be good at, and so it can only be beneficial to hope get more out there. So we're striving to keep pushing it.
100%. And I think that's the power of our roles with Mintrid, really, because we literally make ourselves accessible to the kids. So my driving force is just being the change that I wanted to see, or being who I needed when I was, you know, younger. And, you know, honestly, the amount of young girls that I get coming, and boys, going, oh, can I see your muscles, miss? And that used to be something that was difficult. I'd be like, no, I was trying to like hide it. I can't hide it, it's me. And they're like, whoa, but you're still pretty. And I'm just like, wait, whoa, whoa. And you're still firm. And I'm like, yes, and I'm an athlete and I'm kicking, you know what. So you know, it's just nice, because I guess when I was growing up, everyone was just this superhero on TV and just seemed so unattainable, whereas, you know, I'm there, I'm like, who knows Wembley Stadium, that's where I grew up. And, you know, just relatable things to someone somewhere. But especially we've got a new program called Bolly Run, which is half Bollywood dancing, which I love, and then running. So just getting kids active and sort of almost distracting them and trying something new, and like, let's just, you know, just drop our guards. And then it's amazing how you can get them to run 800 after that, because all the endorphins are going. But the amount of young ladies that, you know, we do a bit of mentoring with it as well, and I ask them, what stops you taking part in sport? And I was thinking they're going to all the boys and this and that, because I just love beating the boys. But it wasn't that. It was just, you know, all the pressures they face with social media and the expectation to look and feel a certain way. And so I was just shocked, because that was never, I was always just, let's just do whatever I can. I want to be the best. Like, what this revolution we're having now is just always what has been in my head. Like, girls can do anything and I can beat the boys. That's like my favorite sports bra. So yeah, I was just shocked at the, you know, how much that affected young ladies and their self-esteem. So it's really, I take it so seriously, like being able to go in, and there's so many of us now in different sports, BMXing, like there's something out there for everyone. But you just need to try. And hopefully by hearing our stories, something can give them the courage to just think, let me just give it a go. Let me try.
I think the body image thing is really key, what you said there, like Instagram and Facebook, like all the social media, and girls think, oh, I've got it. And like, you're like, God, they're edited, come on. But like, I did a talk at my local school and I edited a kind of photo versus one that I hadn't edited. And I was like, look how easy it's doing. Yeah. And also I got married in the summer and kind of, because I got into paracanoe, I then suddenly was getting a lot bigger up top. My arms are getting a lot bigger. And kind of a lot of girls, I work at my local school, and kind of like, oh, what wedding dress are you wearing? Oh, you know, and the people are like, oh, you slimming down for your wedding? I was like, well, actually, I'm accidentally bulking up for my wedding because I've gone to a different sport. But that is more important to me, is to get strong and get better at paracanoe than slimming down for my wedding dress. So I ended up I went for a slightly different award dress so I could
be a bit
freer in my upper body. But it is like, that's what, especially in girls, that's kind of, oh, you know, you're going to fit into their dress, actually. That sport promotes that positive body image. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to be massive, loads of muscles, but actually being strong and being fit and being active is not a bad thing. And that looks, you see the girls at Sports Personality, you saw loads of them on the red carpet, all looked absolutely amazing. And it's like, they're not skinny, they're not restricting their diet or anything, they are just strong and they're fit and they're active, happy women. And I think that's great to promote.
I think being a middle distance runner, you know, there's no, well, in any sport, there's no one size fits all. But I've really noticed it with coming into the 800, because, you know, traditionally I look like a sprinter. What event do you do? 100 metres? No, times up by 8. So I have that a lot. I can't get out. Me in the blocks. Yeah, anyway, we don't get along. So just, you know, and that's what I loved about being in America, because they're just a lot more sort of, you know, just what you see is what you get. Like, good job, everybody. Like, just go kill it. And, you know, I'd be putting my discus throw in 100 meters and she would not complain. But for me, it was definitely something that when I came to elite sport, it was the first time I'd faced any kind of judgment about how I looked, because everything was all great at school. And I remember someone quite high up, you know, saying I was too muscly to run 800. And I was like, okay, but I've run 158. So which part, you know, can't I do? And, you know, trying to make demands. And it was just like, it's about optimum performance. So if I need to be 62 kilos, that's what I need to be. It, you know, Jenny Meadows is half my size, so obviously she's going to be a lot lighter. But that's, you know, what I need to do. Do I go in the gym and hammer weights? No, because that's not going to help my mileage, which I need to do. So we all come from it from different angles, and it's about being your optimum. And obviously when you're young and impressionable, it's not that easy to just understand that. And there's pressure from your peers and things like that. I remember being at boarding school and everyone was trying to be supermodels, and I was like, well, I like food. Let's go play some lacrosse kind of thing. But you know, it's everyone's got their own little journey and has to get to that place where they can look in the mirror and be happy with who's looking back at them. So fortunately for me, sport was the vehicle that helped me do that.
I think it might be time to start thinking about rounding up soon, so I'm going to ask one final question, and I guess similar to what we touched upon earlier, 2020 is just around the corner. There's a lot of potentially very exciting things that could happen for you as individuals, as us as a sporting nation, and for Team Mintridge as well. So I guess sort of how are you feeling ahead of what could be a very, very exciting year?
Do you want to go first?
I guess it'd be similar for both of us. We've got goals set out. Tokyo, especially being a games year, obviously the ultimate goal is to go there and challenge for a medal and challenge for that gold medal. But there's loads of little baby steps along the way. And so keep progressing each day, keep giving my best each day, and hopefully pieces will come together. But I guess it's also enjoying the journey along the way. So putting all that pressure on getting that one goal, then if it doesn't happen, then you kind of left for nothing. It's almost, somebody told me a quote once before when I was at school, and it was saying, like, you've got to be happy without the medal to be happy with it. Like, some people, I've spoken to loads of gold medalists that then kind of had mental health issues, depression, kind of like, oh, it wasn't as good as I thought it was. You've got to enjoy the journey, be happy along the way. So enjoying my sport, enjoying it, getting better, and hopefully those targets and those goals will come along the way. We've got a few championships, we've got Worlds and Paralympics to come along. So just trying my best and get better in both sports and see where that takes me. Also in Mintridge, just keep getting the message out there about Mintridge. Keep, when those programs come along, going and hopefully inspiring young people and getting the message out there and helping that next generation, that future of athletes or just generally happy, active people.
Yeah, what she said. it is a journey. Like all those cliches you hear when you're growing up, it's like, oh my God, I'm at that age where they're actually real. And, you know, hopefully Tokyo is the next stop. So I'm just enjoying that train ride and all the little stops on the way. Mintridge is a big part of that, and it actually keeps me really focused and keeps me going and reminds me of, you know, why I'm doing what I do and why I started. But yeah, it's just about enjoying it, and you know, experience is a really powerful thing, so I'm gonna really need to draw off on that because there are some hungry youngsters coming through. But you know, you got back yourself, haven't you? And I've done some incredible things in the sport, so I'm just looking forward to sort of getting back out there. And I've got a lot of people that want to see me back there as well, so that helps. But yeah, it's just about support. You know, the support network is massive, and you know, federations and things like that, you can get caught up in all of that, but at the end of the day, you know who you're doing it for and why you're doing it. So you know,
I believe in you
too. We believe in Schwarzfield too. Thanks for this outlet. It's so nice to be able to sort of just say what you want to say and have this platform, because there's so many athletes that are going through the same thing and we don't talk. Yeah, it's like, yeah, me too. Yeah, thank you guys.
We are here as a Players Podcast, so thank you so much for coming on, being some of our, if not our best ever interviewees. I'm going to say that right now.
I've
thoroughly enjoyed the last hour. We'll definitely be following your careers very closely, and all the best, and maybe who knows, one day we can get you back on.
Yes, yes. Love it. Anyway, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
A huge thanks once again to Laura and Marilyn for speaking to us and being such fantastic interviewees. We cannot wait to follow their progress this year, and who knows, maybe one day we can get them back on the show. A massive thank you must also go to Mintridge for continuing to give us unprecedented access to the athletes, and we cannot wait to bring you more very soon. In the meantime, make sure you follow us across social media using the handle @sportsbillpod and subscribe to the podcast on all of your usual outlets. Alistair will be back in a fortnight to bring you another fantastic interview, so make sure you tune in then.